tempted to let the song play here a little bit for my buddy Perry, who thinks this is, and he's probably right, the best part of the show. Just play the best of the Who. I know Lance likes that. Yeah, you dig that, eh, bud?
Yeah.
Enough of you barking about hockey. Like anyone cares, Merrick. Just play the best of the Who. Ba-dum-bum. 11 games tonight. A couple games last night. We're still standing by to see what happens with the Vancouver Canucks. Ottawa Senators shut down for 3 games. Issues, issues, issues. And guests coming up on the program. Jim Boomer Gordon from the NHL Network Radio Experience will be dropping by here in about 4 or 5 minutes' time. Go over the headlines of the day, preview some of the games. Wayne Scanlon, who covers the Ottawa Senators for Sportsnet, he'll be aboard in hour two. 3 games postponed after a COVID outbreak, as we all know. Every day was like an Agatha Christie novel as we'd find out who has fallen victim and who has been added to the list. Sanity prevails, as I hear everyone in San Jose screaming about it, by the way, because we went through the same things here with Sharkland. Sanity prevails, and they hit pause for 3 games for the Ottawa Senators. Dion Phaneuf is going to stop by in hour two as well. Dion Phaneuf today called it a career officially. Over 1,000 games in the NHL, not a single game in the American League. Now, 1 game in the minors. Went right from Red Deer to the NHL, and he stayed. Also played 55 playoff games. And played in some big markets, right? Like, played in Calgary, started there, big Canadian market. Toronto, we've all talked about that. Ottawa as well. And I've always maintained it takes a certain type of player and a certain type of mentality to excel in those markets and to want that stage. And as Brian Burke has told us numerous times on this program and others, there are a lot of Canadian players that don't want to play in Canadian cities and specifically don't want to play in Toronto. Because the stage is too big, the microscope is always on. Therefore, you, as a player slash person, always have to be on. And one of the things that I always respected about Phaneuf is he embraced it, seemed to enjoy it, never shied away from it. Were there controversies? Of course. Were there awkward moments? Certainly. But I do think it takes a certain type of person to be able to excel in markets like Calgary, markets like Toronto, markets like Ottawa, all the Canadian markets, really, where this sport is center stage. Phaneuf never shied from it, ever. And here's a guy, too. We'll get into this with Phaneuf in hour two. Actually, we'll talk to Jim about this, Boomer from the NHL Network. The thing about Phaneuf, I remember when he started in the NHL as a rookie. 20 goals, good, right? And hammering guys. I remember saying to myself, by the end of this guy's career, we're going to say about Dion Phaneuf that he hit like Stevens and he shot like McInnes. Like, wasn't he the combination of both those players? Just in that first season. I mean, the game settles in after a few years and you learn how to play. But when you're a young kid and you're raw and you're trying to do something every single shift and the idea of pacing yourself through a game, let alone a season, is foreign to you. Remember that season going, this guy's insane. This guy's great, for one. Calgary's got a gem. But he's that combination of Stevens and McInnes right there, right in front of us. We'll talk to Dion Phaneuf an hour or two. Rick Peckham is going to drop by as well. So Rick Peckham, okay, Foster Hewitt Award winner, honored by the Hockey Hall of Fame. Big luncheon yesterday. It's always a big deal. Tony Gallagher, Elmer Ferguson. So Rick Peckham yesterday gets that nod. Today, Nashville facing off against Toronto. Pete Weber is ill. We believe it is not COVID-related. I exchanged texts with Pete this morning. It's not COVID-related. And so standing in Pete's place for the game tonight, coming out of retirement for one night only, don't know. For one night only, perhaps, Rick Peckham calls the Nashville Predators-Toronto Maple Leafs game. So that's going to be a lot of fun. A couple of things to comment on, and we'll get to Boomer's thoughts on this as well. Some really great speeches last night. It is always a treat hearing the Hall of Fame speeches, and there's always something in all of them that you can take out. I want to start with Kim St. Pierre quickly here. Kim St. Pierre brought the house down. Oh, I didn't mention Aaron Ambrose coming up from the national team. the bottom of the hour. Get her thoughts on what we saw yesterday from Kim St. Pierre. Always look forward to talking to Ambrose. You know, when she starts talking about writing your own story and power to achieve anything, you know, any young girl watching that who wants to pick up a hockey stick or maybe already has picked up a hockey stick, can't wait to get on the rink today. That's how powerful that speech was. Loved Marian Hossa talking about Brent Peterson, his old coach in Portland who helped get him ready for the NHL. And Doug Wilson, you know, Berkey was on the show yesterday, and I believe he referred to Doug as elegant. There's a Béliveau-esque quality about Doug Wilson, and you saw that yesterday. And the people that he mentioned, the late Keith Magnuson, the late Tony Esposito, Stan Mikita, saying, you know, Stan was his first roommate, and Stan used to say to him, you make a living from what you get, you make a life from what you give. That's beautiful stuff. That was a wonderful, wonderful speech by the San Jose Sharks general manager, Doug Wilson. We got a lot to get to today. Let's get Boomer here really quickly from NHL Network Radio, our friend Jim Boomer Gordon. How are you today, Boomer?
Do you know no one's ever once compared me to Béliveau?
Nor I. I have an autograph. I'll tell you, one of the biggest thrills I ever got in my life. So when I used to do ringside for Hockey Night in Canada, this would have been 2008 to 2011. I used to get the Montreal assignment a lot. And after a few times, you know, you always see Béliveau, you know, walking down the hallway as you're setting up for the walk-off after the first intermission. And he's, you know, nodding and very polite to everybody. And I'm like a nobody, right, Boomer? Like, I'm like, who's that guy? Like, oh, iDesk guy, I think. So the first time Mr. Béliveau walked down the hallway, you know, goes around the Montreal Canadiens dressing room and walks down the hallway, he walked by and he said, I'll never forget it, in that baritone voice of his as well, Salut, Jeff. And honestly, Boomer, it was the biggest thrill in the world to be like, how does Jean Béliveau know my name?
Yeah.
And it's like right away, he's like, yes, Mr. Béliveau. Hello, Mr. Béliveau. How are you? I stammered out something like I'm a, you know, a teenager at a school dance. That to me was one of my biggest thrills, not just in hockey, but in life. Jean Béliveau saying, Salut, Jeff.
Yeah, you should have went home right after that.
I should have. Like, call it a career, right?
Your night's done.
Yeah, no one's ever confused me from Béliveau. Hey, before we get into some NHL issues, some NHL game stuff as well, do you have a thought on the Hall of Fame speeches? I always enjoy them. At times I get the goosebumps. I did yesterday listening to Kim St. Pierre. Loved how elegant, as Berkey says, Doug Wilson was last night. Who did it for you?
Okay, if you're asking me for a thought on the speeches, I'm going to say this. I don't want to ruin your day. Clearly, you enjoyed last night.
Yes.
What bothered me is what bothers me every year, that I was forced to choose between Tampa and the Islanders and the Jackets and the Red Wings and Hall of Fame speeches. And I often use social media as a barometer for what people are choosing. I didn't see anyone out on social media last night talking about Hall of Fame speeches, which to me means they got prioritized. And I know the Hockey Hall of Fame and the NHL don't have any kind of partnership, so it's not their responsibility to work together. But it seems so incredibly disrespectful to people who've dedicated their lives to the sport to be the best at what they do and to be enshrined in this fashion. Mm-hmm. And hockey can't set aside an hour and a half for this. If you got to play games, have some West Conference games later after the ceremony. Start the ceremony on TV at 7. Do something. But year in, year out, Jeff, my job is to watch games, and I have to do it. And I feel so slutty every time when it happens where I'm watching games, and I'm like, I need to be watching the Hall of Fame, and I'm forced to choose. I think it's a bad look for the sport, and I wish we could fix this.
So one of two things can happen then. The NHL can accommodate, or the Hall of Fame can do their ceremonies before the season or after the season. That to me, because I always hear, every year we hear the hue and cry. You know, how can they have games on Hall of Fame Day? Well, why put Hall of Fame Day during the season? Why not do it before the season? This has never been explained to me. Why not do the Hall of Fame before the season begins?
Well, football does it at Canton. That's how they kick off their preseason, with the Hall of Fame game. Mm-hmm. My Steelers play in it from time to time. I've always argued, you know, they don't do it this way anymore, but Saturday night used to be the Hall of Fame game in Toronto.
Correct.
And they'd have all the enshrinees there, and they'd get interviewed in the suites and everything, and it was just a feel-good night. I'd make the ceremony the Saturday afternoon. I'd bring back the Saturday game, or you can make it a Sunday game if you want to. Mm-hmm. Have everyone start the enshrinement ceremony around 4 o'clock, make it a big festive, and then once the thing's over, everyone walks across the street to Scotiabank and enjoy a hockey game together. That's how I would do it, but maybe the hall doesn't, you know, I'm not Kelly Massey, so I don't know, but maybe the hall doesn't think 4 o'clock is an appropriate time to have a ceremony. But I just think making the two go ahead, there's a solution there. We should find it.
There is one. Now, let me ask you about a couple of the inductees specifically, and I want to ask you about Marian Hossa. So yeah. Marian Hossa, you know the old saying, you can't give a great player a bad pass? Mm-hmm. The one skill set, and listen, when you talk to players all the time, and they'll tell you, Hossa's like the player's player. Hossa's like the guy that all the players look at and go, man, this guy is awesome. Like at every single level, how he never won a Selkie. I know centers have more responsibilities defensively, and that's why we default to them. The last winger to win a Selkie was Yuri Lehtinen, but how this guy got through his career without a Selkie trophy, to me, is borderline criminal. But the one skill set that I think Marian Hossa has better than anyone maybe I've ever seen, Boomer, is did you ever see Hossa flub a pass? You could throw garbage at him, and no problem. He could take any single pass you threw to him. And that is a very underappreciated skill.
I there were a couple of qualities I loved about him. One was his ability to default. I think if you're going to build a dynasty team, you need a couple guys at the top, but you need a couple guys willing to be reluctant superstars. He was happy to just go about his business and give the limelight to the younger kids, to all the pretty boys that were on that team that made the team so fun. The other thing I loved about him is he was just a bull in the corners. I mean, yes. You said you never saw him take a bad pass. Did you ever see him lose a puck battle in his career? I remember Tracy Myers used to, every time Hossa would go into the puck and just steal something from someone, she'd post that gif from Spaceballs with, you know, Rick Moranis swinging but not being able to reach. He was just a dominant player. I go back, I'm sure you do too, remembering how dominant he was that year with the Portland Winterhawks and thinking, wow, this guy's coming to the NHL. He's just going to be a monster. It's unfortunate how many great players went through Ottawa and didn't stay and had to go have success somewhere else. But And I talked at length on my show yesterday about what you said. It's amazing that the Selkie Trophy has been reduced to a center's award, and I'm not buying the defensive responsibility. I think it's just for years been too easy to use face-off stats as a default to doing a lot of work. I think if, you know, I've been on the Mark Stone front for so many years now, same. Another ex-senator,
yep.
And I don't know if he'll ever win one, and I don't know. Lehtinen, this may be the streak that lasts forever. I don't know. But yeah, he should have had a couple Selkies.
Absolutely. I thought on Jerome McGinley. To me, everything he did was explosive. The shot, the hit, the fight, everything. That, to me, was Jerome McGinley. Your thoughts?
Well, one of my takeaways is 4 years ago, he played on the LA Kings, and I don't even remember that. That's how old I'm getting. Like, I don't even remember Jerome McGinley, the LA King. I think, you know, for all the great things he did in Calgary and had a couple goals or a couple 50-goal seasons, I think people remember, one, the pass to Crosby in 2010.
Yes.
Because we remember the Iggy scream so well. And I think what hockey fans, and I think this speaks to why people loved McGinley, what they want from their superstars. I think when people think of McGinley, they still think of him fighting Vinny LeCavalier in the 2004 Stanley Cup final. I mean, you got Calgary, Tampa, and the best players on each team decide to throw. And they didn't just... This was not a performative act. Like, they threw from the cheap seats. Yep. If you go back and watch that fight, and you know, the guy never won a cup, but maybe he did win a cup if you go back to Game 6 and Marty Gelinas.
Just call a timeout, right? Why are you facing off? That's another one I couldn't. Why are you so quick to go to the face-off dot? Calgary, what are you doing? Give him time. Give him time.
I don't know how hockey used to handle the sport when there wasn't video review for everything, because I was watching the other night, St. Louis was playing Edmonton, Barbashev scores, and they did the play went on. It hit the camera under the bar, and then you get the old horn 30 seconds later, and the players know exactly what happened. I think Robert Thomas knew it was in the whole time, but he was the only one. So imagine all the goals in hockey history if we could go back and see the ones that should have counted that didn't, but such is life.
You know what? Here's another one. I was talking to Stephen Walkman about this at the beginning of the season. It would be interesting slash perhaps infuriating and annoying to a lot of people to go back and look at the greatest goals through history, whether it's Henderson, 72, Gretzky to Lemieux, 87, all of them, right? Nystrom in the series against Philadelphia gives the Islanders their first cup. Think of all the biggies, Boomer, and go back and have a look at the zone entries to see if they were onside. How many goals would have been called back of the biggies?
Well, if as an Islander fan, I can tell you in 80, it was the goal before. It was the
Tinelli. Was it Tinelli that it was offside in the first, the 3-1 goal, I think? Was blatant.
I think it was Butch Goring and Clark Gillies that teamed up, and he was probably a good 3 feet offside. It might have been the worst blown offside in the history of the sport, but hey, we can't take it back. And,
yep.
You know, we won 3 more cups after that, so I'm not complaining. You know, you watch enough bad calls for your team, you get a good one. But you're right. If we went back and retrofit the conversation, it would be interesting.
Well, I mean, you look at save percentages, you know, that weren't kept for the longest time. Like, that's forced us to reevaluate some goaltenders as well. Oh. So, like, when you go back and have a look at, you know, the save percentage of someone like Jean Meloche, and you say, maybe if this guy was on a better team, we'd be talking about him for the Hall of Fame.
You know what's interesting that you say that, though? You talk about old goalies. I was watching the Hall of Fame ceremony. I don't know if you remember the video montage for Doug Wilson.
Yes.
But he scored. I mean, you and I are similar vintage. We grew up watching Doug Wilson with the big bomb. But,
yeah.
Boy, some of those goalies didn't play those shots from distance too well. You look at those pads just jammed together, and you think, man, that was the style back in the day.
I was saying this to Kevin Woodley from InGoal on our 32 Thoughts podcast the other day. Congratulations, goalies. It took you over 100 years to figure out how to play the position. Well done.
Yeah.
Okay, a couple things. Vancouver's about to open up a 3-game homestand. Do you get the sense that we may see changes before then, or do you get a feeling that this homestand is going to determine the fates of the general manager and maybe the coach as well?
If I knew you were going to ask me to try and get inside the heads of the Vancouver Canucks, I may have refused coming on. They're one of those teams. They're like their expansion cousin, the Sabres. It's like you look at Vancouver, you look at Buffalo, and try and understand what their plan is, what their plan has been. I don't know what they're going to do. I think if they were going to do something, they would have done it by now. The game the other night did have an ominous tone, and that fan base is so acerbic. I think the last thing after a trip like that you want is to come home to the Colorado Avalanche on Wednesday night. That's got an ugly tone to it. I wouldn't even know who would be in trouble there. I think if Benning was going to get run out, he could have been run out by now. He's given the organization enough reasons to lose faith in him, and it hasn't happened. Travis Green last year, they waited to the very, very end. Your buddy Elliot Friedman, I think, was posting on a daily basis, aren't they,
yeah,
you know, going to give him that extension? I don't think you ever want to leave a coach lame duck. So nothing about it feels right. Elias Pettersson is a non-factor out there most nights, and I don't understand that. But if you break down the numbers, and I'm going to do it on my show today, the overriding factor is they currently have the worst penalty kill I have ever seen in my life. In their last 9 games, Jeff, mm-hmm, they have given up 16 power play goals. Like, I have never seen this. They haven't had a single game in their last 9,
yeah,
that they didn't give up at least one power play goal. Their penalty kill is worse than the Oilers' power play is great, if that makes any sense. But I don't know how you can't. I mean, penalty kill is supposed to be effort driven. So you should be able to fix this. But if you can't fix the penalty kill, then Travis Green is dead man walking, because that's his responsibility. And I think their penalty kill right now is clicking around 60%. If you can't fix this, you're in big trouble. And I know the Avs are depleted, but they're still the Avs.
Yeah.
And Wednesday night we'll have a weird feeling if they fall behind early.
The Pettersson thing is confounding to me. Like, I've said all along, okay, it's going to get better. Don't worry. He's getting his groove back, getting his timing back. We're going to see the Elias Pettersson from a couple of seasons ago. Don't worry about Elias Pettersson. And as the games have gone on and we've watched, and then the moment that sort of capped it for me was that play on Sunday right in front of the net where Pettersson's just, it's just him and John Gibson, and it's the easiest poke check John Gibson's ever made, what, Boomer, maybe in his career. You know, certainly going back to the Kitchener Rangers. And I said to myself, like, what's up with Pedersen? That used to be, that was money in the bank. Pedersen, you know, between the hash marks in front of a goaltender, it's either a shoulder fake, it's a snapshot, but it's going in the net. And it's like he's playing with about zero confidence right now. And I always wonder about, you know, what happens when elite level skill guys lose their confidence and everything that used to work doesn't work anymore. Then it becomes mental and then it just compounds and you cave in your own brain. It's got to be awful being him right now.
I hope it's just confidence. He looks checked out to me right now, and that would be a bigger concern. And people are debating whether Travis Green has lost the room. I don't know. I'm not there. But I still think back to that, 18-19 season where he came in as a rookie. He had a couple five-point nights that year. I don't know if you remember, but it was Colorado. He played Colorado one night, and the final, I believe, was 7-6, and he put up 5 points, and he was unstoppable. And it was like the entire hockey world came to a collective stop and said, wow, we are giving birth to a genius right now. And we thought, what is this kid capable of? And I didn't see that last year from him. And last year was a throwaway year for the Canucks. I mean, they were out of it early. They lost all those hockey games to Montreal early. And you think, okay, maybe they're just not a bubble team, that this thing ain't, these protocols aren't working for them. But was this going to be the bounce back year? And it isn't. You look at the blue line, and it's so thin. Mm-hmm. I don't know where they're going to go with that. They've got guys up front, but sometimes the big guys don't show up. So I still look at the roster, Jeff, and I think there's more there than what they're showing, 5 wins through 14 games or whatever it is. But they got to fix it quicker, like you said. That's just not the market to struggle in. I'll tell you one thing. A little bird told me something the other day and threw a name out at me, and I'm sure as heck not going to put it out on your show. It would be irresponsible. But if changes do happen there, it could be something really big.
At what level? At the GM or the coach?
I'll shoot you a text. Okay. Like I said, it would be irresponsible of me to throw names around. But it's fun to think about. I'll tell you that much.
I had one whispered to me on Saturday and checked it out and it was denied. But that would have been a whopper as well. Let me ask you about the Metropolitan, and I want to ask you about the Metropolitan vis-a-vis a player that's on waivers right now, and that's Kyle Clifford. So St. Louis waves and want to make room for Scott Perunovich, who will make his debut tonight for the St. Louis Blues. He's been lighting it up in the American League at 20 points in 12 games or something like that. Like Perunovich looks great. So Kyle Clifford on waivers. The one thing we know about the Metropolitan is it is very competitive. Every team is .500 or better, led by the Carolina Hurricanes at an .846 clip. It also has a little bit of old school in it. Whether it's Tom Wilson or whether it's Ryan Reeves, like teams are grabbing sluggers there, it seems. As Ryan Reeves once famously told the New York Rangers previous administration, you have a Tom Wilson problem. I am the solution to your Tom Wilson problem. Which I'm assuming a team in the Metro is going to claim him. It's $1 million.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like I look at the Metro and say there's teams that have, like, I wonder about Pittsburgh. And you wonder, you know, you saw, you know, what Crosby did on the weekend, and you saw Crosby getting roughed up. You know, that's not going to sit well with Hextall or Brian Burke. I don't know if they claim Kyle Clifford, but they're looking for someone like that. Like, I know a lot of teams want Nick DeLaurier out of Anaheim, and I don't think they're going to let him go, even though he's on an expiring contract right now. You have someone like Kyle Clifford available. Do you think anyone in the Metro, as it's like an arms race there, do you think anybody from the Metro claims Kyle Clifford?
Well, just thinking out loud, because I was on the air when the news broke that Clifford was going on waivers. And by the way, I had Doug Armstrong on my show in the summer, and he talked openly about Perunovich and said, this guy's going to be a good one. So, and good for the Blues, because that could really help them long term. The only name that I thought of when you asked me was the New York Rangers, simply because we just found out this morning that Sammy Blais, who had come over from St. Louis, did his ACL, and his season is over. So, I definitely, and this goes back to the owner, Dolan, and his concerns that the Rangers weren't tough enough and he didn't want to see him pushed around, and that created the Tom Wilson problem that you spoke of. They went out to get some guys, and they didn't just get Reeves. They got Barkley Goodrow, who can really throw them, and they got Sammy Blais. And who knows if whether they feel like they have someone in the minors who can come up and fill his role, or maybe Clifford would be a cheap ad. But you're right. There's some nasty in the Metro, and it's going to take a long time for this one to sort itself out. The Islanders are actually in last place in the division. Division was about 31 games over 500 3 weeks into the season. It was incredible. They were beating everybody.
Yeah.
So it is going to be real competitive down the stretch.
Islanders lost to Tampa last night, three games out. They don't play at home, though, until the 20th. I mean, it's
Saturday.
Technically, it's a they're opening up with 13 games on the road. But if you look at how the games are placed, there's still a lot of time at home for the players, just not playing at their home rink. But that is a... that is certainly an interesting one. Around the NHL tonight, a couple of quick hitters here for you. Leafs and Preds for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Sheldon Keefe has gone back to what he started with. Richie with Matthews and Marner. Kerfoot with John Tavares and William Nylander. Two teams, by the way, on a three-game winning streak right now. Before we get to break, your thoughts on this Preds-Leafs matchup tonight?
Well, the Preds are the more interesting story. But on the Leafs, I just found out what you just told me. They're giving Richie another go?
Up top with Matthews and Marner, looks like.
My goodness. I can't think of a player that's gotten off to a worse start in his Toronto time and wore himself out with the fan base faster than Richie did. And maybe they acknowledge that and they've made a financial investment in him, so they're going to try and get him going. The Bruins semi got him going last year on the power play for a bit, but he's been a player that's bounced around and maybe might do some more bouncing. But the fascination is the Preds, because they're coming into town with one of the hottest players in the NHL, and his name is Matt Duchene. I wrote this guy off 3 years ago. I thought he was done. I thought he signed a retirement contract with the Predators. And lo and behold, after a couple of disastrous seasons, last year he and Ryan Johansson, their top two $8 million centers, combined to score 13 goals. They've done that already this year. But Duchene was just on a milk carton all year last year. He didn't even show up in games, and now he's a goal every night. So we'll see if he can keep it going. All of a sudden, their power play works after being brutal for 3 years. And Nashville's one of the hottest teams in the NHL, and they have a history of playing Toronto well. So this will not be an easy game for the Leafs.
Do you get a handle on where David Poile is at with this team? I mean, there was a time last year before Saros got blistering hot and carried the squad right into the playoffs. I mean, we are hearing, you know, Ekholm's going to be traded to the Flyers. Anything not named Josi on the blue line was going. Granlund is going out. They're going to try to find someone to take Johansson's contract. Ditto for Dish. Like, everybody was going. Like, if your name wasn't, I think, Tomasino and Josi, those were the only two, and Saros. Those are the only players they were hanging on to. Everything else, up for grabs. Do you get a sense of where Nashville is at right now? I mean, David Poile's talked hilariously the term competitive rebuild. Where's Nashville at for you, Boomer?
Well, he's never said it, but every move he's ever made in the last year has been designed to shed cash. I mean, they unloaded $10 million in payroll just by moving out Ellis and Arvidsson. And if you look at the returns on those trades, it wasn't about winning hockey trades.
No.
It was about getting salary off their books. And he said for 2 years now that the goal was to get younger and fix their problems in-house. And I'm glad they're doing that. I'm glad you're seeing Ellie Tolvanen and Phil Tomasino in the lineup and an injection of youth. But clearly the organization doesn't want to spend money. We're still in the middle of a pandemic, and I don't think anything's been easy. I think it gets real interesting, because if you play that narrative out, best player on the franchise outside of Josi for several years now has been Forsberg. He's in a contract year. So, you know, for the people who didn't think Nashville was going to be a playoff team this year, it becomes a deadline issue. Do you get him signed by the deadline, or do you move him, and does Philip Forsberg become a huge chip at the deadline? And I still don't think we have that answer. Maybe Poile's already decided that, you know, he's going to be too rich for his blood, and they're going to kick this thing down the road, and we'll find out. But clearly, I think Poile acknowledged at some point what they had wasn't good enough and it was too expensive, which is a horrible combination. So I'll look and see where they go from here. But I got a feeling it's what you said, the competitive rebuild. As long as you got Yossi and Saros in net, you're going to be competitive. But I think they're going to be competitively affordable, if you know what I mean.
I gotcha. Kept you for a long time. Listen, Boomer, thanks so much as always for this. You be well. Continued success. Your show is must listen, as are you. Always appreciate the contributions here, pal.
Thank you, sir. Enjoy the day.
There he is, Jim Boomer Gordon from NHL Network Radio, host of The Point. That's a really good show, really good daily show on NHL Network Radio. We're going to step aside. He mentioned Scott Perunovic, by the way. Perunovic probably would have already been on the St. Louis Blues roster. St. Louis is playing Arizona tonight. Perunovic makes his NHL debut. Will either play beside Justin Falk or Robert Bortuzzo. Skated with both in practice this morning. Probably already would have been there. Like, he's a guy that the minute he went to the American Hockey League, all of a sudden you noticed, okay, this guy's too good for this league. This guy's already ready for the NHL. He'll make his debut tonight. 20 points in 12 games for Perunovic. And if they weren't in LTIR, as they have been lately, Perunovic probably would have already been up. Remember when Elliot on Hockey Night a couple weeks ago talked about the St. Louis Blues asking for COVID cap relief? It's a fully vaccinated team. Can we get some relief to call a player up? The guy in question was Scott Perunovic. He's up. We'll have a look at him tonight. Meanwhile, we'll talk to Aaron Ambrose after the break from the Canadian national team. Defenseman there. They just coming back from Finland where they went through the Finns like a hog into truffles. Canada just on fire. USA on the horizon. We'll talk to Ambrose here in a couple of moments. Dion Phaneuf in hour two. Wayne Scanlon covering the Ottawa Senators and their three-game postponement. We'll talk to Wayne about that and also Rick Peckham, 2020 Foster Hewitt Award winner. Call the game tonight for the Preds coming out of retirement to do his buddy Pete Weber a solid. Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Lovelands Candy. Is this going to be all who today? Is that the deal? Seeker, eh? Nice one. We just let it go for the half hour? Just like Eminence Front off the top. Great tune. Welcome back to the program. Coming up in hour two, Dion Phaneuf, former NHL defenseman, who today officially called it a career. Over 1,000 games, three-time All-Star, played in some big markets, played in some big games, won some big medals. Dion Phaneuf joins us in hour two. Wayne Scanlon from Sportsnet. We'll talk about the Ottawa Senators. Next three games postponed. This is a team that needs a COVID break. Thank you very much. And Rick Peckham as well, Foster Hewitt Award winner. In the meantime, we'll turn our attention to our good friend Aaron Ambrose from the Canadian national team, who I believe has a couple of days off after just sticking it to Finland in their own backyard. Hello, Aaron Ambrose. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you, Jeff Merrick?
I'm doing good. At a certain point, I want to talk to you about your dog, Henry, but we'll get to that eventually because that is always a headline. Take us back to last week and the games against Finland. First of all, set the stage for us. For our listeners that may not understand contextually where Finland fits into the entire scheme of women's hockey right now, because everybody knows all about Canada and the United States, and that world championship again delivered big, and the audience was big, and people loved it, and the entertainment level was high. But where does Finland fit into the equation?
I think Finland's right there with us. I mean, you look back to 2019 Worlds when they defeated us in the semifinals, and I think that was a big step, not only for them and their program, but for women's hockey, and obviously disappointing to be on the wrong side of that, but I think it was huge for us to go in there, travel all the way to Finland and have those types of games because we were able to show ourselves. And although Finland was missing some of their NCAA players who couldn't get back and stuff, like, it was still important for us to have that travel, get that travel underneath our belts and honestly go out there and really dominate them in a lot of different aspects.
What's the main strength of the Finnish team?
Well, I would say that their goaltending has been solid. Kaisla was the top goalie at Worlds this year, which was very deserving. And then their top-end skill, I mean, I think they've got one of the best, if not the best defenseman in the world in here, Koski. Mm-hmm. And then they've got some firepower. Like, I pride our, as we like to call it, our power kill this week, because we really kept their power play under wraps, and that's something that is a huge strength of theirs. So obviously not the things you wanted to do by giving them all the opportunities, but at the same time, we were able to kind of shut them down.
Shut them down. You picked up a couple of points on Sunday in the 5-1 win as well. How do you, I was hosting a panel at the primetime conference this morning, and we were talking about, you know, how you evaluate your business and how you evaluate your league, and, you know, what types of premiums do you put on what you do, and, you know, what are your key KPIs, key performance indicators and such. When it comes to your game specifically, Aaron, how do you, like, what do you put the most pride in? How do you judge your game? Like, when you come away from it, you say, I had a good game because, or I had a bad game because?
Ooh, that's a tough one, Jeff.
I gave you time.
I think there's a lot of different.
You've had time to have a couple of cups of coffee here. It's 12:30 Eastern. Come on, you got this.
You know that I'm jet lagged.
I know that.
No, I think that a big thing for me is just understanding what I can contribute and where I can contribute, and it's going to change kind of game to game. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I pride myself a lot in my offensive game, especially on the power play, and that's something I want to continue to build as being a shooting threat. But like any player, and I think that we as, I would like to say, Leafs fans in the Toronto Leaf market, obviously we have a lot of pride on actually producing points, but at the same time, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're not playing well if you're not producing. So mm-hmm. you have to find a balance, because at the same time, like, I could be playing very well, and especially as a defenseman, maybe I'm just not getting opportunities. So I think that as much as I want to contribute offensively, and I love contributing offensively, mm-hmm. I know the most important thing for me is taking care of my own zone first, getting breakouts happening right away, and really letting the forwards do the work, because we have so much skill up front.
This is, as you well know, because you're a centralized athlete, this is an Olympic year. And when you're involved in blowout games, how concerned is the team? How concerned is the coaching staff about developing bad habits? And I guess this is a roundabout way of saying, you know, you want everything to work and you want things to click, and that can sometimes lead to a blowout. But how dangerous are they for your team?
I wouldn't say they're dangerous, especially because we've been on the other side of it quite a few times this year, I think, with facing the boys. And so I think for us, it was great for us to just finally get some goal production. And I think that kind of looking back at Worlds and our production overall was increased immensely compared to what it's been in the past couple of years. So for us as a team, like, those are games that we need to continue to thrive on and look to really take advantage of, because our offensive game has continued to develop and there's a lot of different offensive systems that we're continuing to implement. So I understand what you're saying, and I don't want to say you're wrong, because I would never say that about you.
You can, Aaron. You've sent it plenty privately. Don't worry. You can share with everyone.
But I do think that we hold each other accountable so well that we know when it's not acceptable to be doing the things that we're doing. And for instance, like, we knew that our penalties weren't acceptable this week, and as great as it was to work on that penalty kill, a lot of the offensive zone penalties, they just weren't acceptable. And Troy let us know that. We let each other know that. Something that we're going to have to clean up before the U.S. next week.
With Aaron Ambrose from the Canadian national team, also a member of the PWHPA, I do want to get to the conversation about the United States and what is ahead, but I haven't had a chance to talk to you publicly about this since it happened, but that World Championship was fantastic. And
yeah, it was.
I cannot imagine skating in that overtime, knowing that, you know, one little mistake, one bad bounce, puck off the toe, puck off the heel, you know, puck off the skate can lead to disaster. You guys didn't seem fazed by any of it at any time. And that was a really close game. I was watching, my kid was on the ice, and everyone went to a restaurant afterwards, and the whole bar was all surrounding this, you know, a couple of televisions by the bar as everybody was watching this game. And the number was huge for it. A lot of Canadians ended up watching this, as they always do. What was it like for you guys on the ice and on the bench? Because I'll tell you, it was nerve-wracking on the other side of the magic eyeball.
Honestly, Jeff, I haven't been a part of a team that was so confident in what we were going to do. And I feel like that's such a cliche thing to say, like we didn't panic, but when we went down 2-0, like we actually didn't panic. And I think that that was just, I know it is, because in so many years past, like we have hit the panic button. We started to go individual and it was like, okay, it happened. Like just water off the duck's back. Like we just kept going. And I think that that was something that by the time we got to overtime, it was like, well, we're here. Like, let's friggin' win this thing. Mm-hmm. And without a doubt, I think that any player on our team would say that having Marie-Philippe Poulin on your team makes quite the difference. And yet again, she shows why she is probably the greatest women's hockey player to ever play the game.
The greatest and the most clutch.
Yep.
Like we always talk about big game players, and whether it's, you know, the NHL, the PWHPA, international, we always talk about clutch players and big moments. There are plenty in the NHL, and we all know about their performances. I don't know that Marie-Philippe Poulin gets, you know, the accolades that she deserves for being such a key big game player. Olympics, yep. World Championships, all of it. Let me ask you this, though. Two things. One, did you think it went in? And two, where were you when the horn went off in OT?
So I was on the bench and I didn't think it went in. But then based on Pooh's reaction, I was like, okay, did it go in? And then Jim Midgley behind us was like, we just got to keep going. We got to keep going. And we were like, I'm very confused as to what happened. and we also had a situation like that earlier in the round robin against US. Nurse, he scored.
Yeah.
And they ended up calling it a goal. So, but when Pooh got back to the bench, she was adamant that it went in. So we kind of didn't know what to do after that. Hmm. And then I would say I was like fourth in from the D, and that buzzer went off. And I don't know. It was mayhem. I think I ended up getting out of the door. I don't think I hopped.
Yeah. You did door? How did you have the composure to do door? I would jump boards so fast.
No, I think I even pushed somebody out the door too. but the forwards were so close to the forwards and they love jumping the boards and they always get in our way. So that's why we went door.
It was an awesome moment. It was a great moment in Canadian hockey. And it's always, listen, Americans love beating Canadians. Canadians love beating Americans. It's a wonderful rivalry, both in the women's and the men's side as well. It is, you know, people have talked about it for so long, the future of international hockey, these two teams. Having said that, on the horizon now, coming up more games against the United States. You remember the old saying when you grew up probably playing with Eilish on the Georgina Blaze. Was you either win or you learn. What do you expect the United States to learn from the World Championships that you will see next?
From the World Championships, Jeff, and from our most recent time seeing them in Allentown and Hartford.
Yeah.
And I think that even from Allentown to Hartford was a completely different game. They adjusted a lot and they played very well. Their forecheck has definitely changed and it's put a lot of pressure on us as D, so we have to be ready for that. And I mean, it's not like they're not a good team. We know they're a great team. We know that every time we play them, it's going to be a great game. And I feel like we finally have this confidence in ourselves that is allowing us to know that the way we're playing will work out. Whether we're down 2-0 to them, whether they score first, whether we score first, whatever it is, we have this confidence in ourselves as a group that I think is something that we got to make sure we hold on to. And I just honestly can't wait for the rink to be sold out in Kingston. Like I haven't played in front of fans in Canada for a very long time. And
that's great.
It's something I'm really looking forward to. Like I think the last time we played in front of a Canadian crowd, like an actual crowd was in like London in 2019 or 2018, 2019.
Wow.
So it's been a while. So it's something I'm really looking forward to on Sunday.
I always have to ask you this because you do one of the most insane things in hockey, and that is dive in front of shots on a consistent basis. I don't know why you like doing this, Ambrose, but you do. How's the body right now?
Other than jet lagged, body's not bad. We actually played handball before we headed out to Finland the morning of, and I ended up being goalie in the handball tournament. So that gave me quite a few bruises. Yeah. But we're doing okay. I think us as a D-Corps actually did a really good job of blocking shots this weekend on the penalty kill. So All in all, it's holding up and just honestly ready to get things going on Sunday. Not that I don't want these days off, though.
You know, blocking shots, we have Craig McTavish working on our various panels now, and we can all remember, you know, Mac T when he was with the Oilers and doing those, you know, tennis ball slap shots from the point. Everybody's getting down to block shots. Now it's expected of just about everybody outside of perhaps the most elite level superstar to get down to block shot. Who taught you? Did anyone like ever sit you down and say like, okay, here's how you're going to learn to block shots, Erin Ambrose?
No, I wouldn't say anybody did. I think at Clarkson, it was a very big thing that was harped on. We were a very defensively proud team, and that was something that we always did. And I wouldn't say that a lot of us knew how to properly block shots, but we would try our best to kind of get in ways. But I do know that, like at Concordia, when I was coaching there, we would take out the rubber pucks and really try to work on actual technique. And I would not say I'm the greatest blocking of shots with good technique, as Nurse Yule definitely attests to, just with my hands and stuff. But honestly, if you don't ask Dion how he blocks shots in an hour or so, then I'm going to be disappointed in you, because I would like to hear that answer.
I will get that in early to make sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, Dion Phaneuf coming up here in about 25 minutes time.
You're welcome for the segue.
No, that's really good. We'll get you a producer credit at the end. So Matt Marchese and Erin Ambrose producing today's broadcast. We appreciate the contributions. Last one for you. How's this? This has been a really crazy year for everybody, and specifically for women's hockey, and specifically, you know, your corner of it. There was a world championship that was shut down. There was a PWHPA showcase that went off, and that was great. And there was a world championship, and there are international events, and it is centralization, which brings with it its own, you know, challenges, certainly mentally. And then there will be an Olympics in Beijing. How has this year been for Erin Ambrose?
This year has been a grind. But at the same time, I'm thankful, Jeff, for just what everybody's been able to do to kind of make things happen. I think you talk about the PWHPA event that went off, and obviously there was a lot of uncertainty surrounding it because of Worlds getting canceled in Halifax. And then honestly, just for everything to, knock on wood, have gone off without a hitch so far is obviously very important. But then just like the work that our program has put into making sure that we're safe and where we go is always, I guess, the best situation for us. And sometimes it's hard to see it when you're in the moment, but on days like today and this week when I'm off for these couple of days before heading into the rivalry series, you understand how lucky we are to be doing this. And I'm just thankful to be around still and hopefully continue on that path with two big games against the U.S. and then into the Capital City.
Okay, 30 seconds left. Give me 30 seconds on Henry, your best friend.
Well, I got a night with him, and I'm leaving him in about 35 minutes. So I'd appreciate if I could have these 30 seconds back so I can add them into Henry time, but it's fine. I would never ditch you early.
Scratches and cookies and biscuits and runs with the dog. Give my best to Henry. Erin, you be well, okay? We'll check back regular.
Thank you very much for having me, Jeff.
There she is, Erin Ambrose from the Canadian national team, also a member of the PWHPA. Some events coming up against the United States, and she mentioned Kingston, and that'll be nice. Hopefully to see a full barn there.